I work, just to let you guys know a little bit about myself, my role at EV. So I got invited along to EV about 16 years ago, and I became a Christian there, and I've been there ever since. And I've been on staff for, I think this is my ninth year on staff, and I pretty much primarily just work in the area of mission, sort of young adults, so the Sunday night congregation, the Saturday night congregation a little bit, and mission work to local high schools, public high schools, that type of thing. I'm really impressed and at awe with what loads of you guys can do as sort of like senior ministers of churches and stuff like that. It's sort of, I think of you guys as sort of like the jack of all trades, but I guess I've had the unique opportunity and privilege to really have permission to become a bit of a specialist and think into one area of Christian life, possibly more than other people, sort of thing. So that's a little bit of that. And just to say again, we do feel the awkwardness of presenting to you guys because, it's not like we've worked anything out more than you guys have. We've probably just been thinking about it a little bit longer, that type of thing. So what I'm going to try to present is principles. At large, principles that we've thought about, worked on, and we're trying to implement. And when I do break into this is what EV is doing, or what we have done, that is not me saying this is what you should do in your context. That is purely to colour in a little bit of the principles, so you actually know what the heck I'm talking about. Because sometimes you just say, you know, this is the principle, figure it out in your context without what could that look like somewhere. That's a bit confusing sort of thing. So I will break into that a bit, but I'll let you know when I'm doing that. And the only other thing to mention is that mission is like a really wide area, which can entail loads of different things. What we're looking at today is simply how could you set up your church, what are the principles to look at to set up your church to be doing evangelism, to be doing mission in your area. So we are not going to talk about how to encourage people in their prayer for mission. We are not going to talk about how to send missionaries to, be missional in other areas, those types of things. It's how to set up your church to be on mission where you're at. So I might pray, and then we'll kick in on it. Thank you, God, for this time. I pray that this can be helpful for us, encouraging for us, and I pray it'll be glorifying to you. And I pray that you could bring some fruit from this in our thoughts today. Amen. All right. So I think Adrian's up there. He's going to drive it for me, but he only just found that out, so it might be a bit clunky. What's his name? We're going to have plenty of time for question time as well. I'll pause at certain times, and because we've got, when does this finish? 12:30. So we've got ages. Craig just gave me a message. He's probably asking me how I'm going. So we've got ages. So we'll have plenty of time for question time and stuff. So I'll just present for a little while and then get some questions, that type of thing. So Craig mentioned in his address yesterday morning that he thinks to get mission going and evangelism going in your area, really two things are at stake, sort of thing. There's two big pegs that you need to put in the ground. It's pretty obviously the conversion of the outsider to Christ, and secondly, the conversion of the insider to engage with the gospel, to take the gospel to other people. So the conversion of the outsider to Christ, that's pretty obvious, doesn't need too much explanation, other than two things I will say is we do definitely count and keep track of the conversion growth that we have. It's God that's doing the work, but we want to make good decisions about how we're doing our evangelistic work. We want to know how we're going so we can shape what we're doing to be more effective. So we're very thought out, and we do definitely count how many people are being converted, that type of thing. And when we think through conversion to Christ, it's not how many people ticked a box at the end of a program and then we never saw again, or how many people put their hands up or came down the front. It's people converted is have assurance in their own faith and holding on to Christ years down the track. That's what we're interested in doing. That's what we're focusing on doing. So conversion of the insider to engage. So I've used the word conversion there. It's kind of a funny one to use, but purely to emphasise that it is a dual emphasis of what you need to be working on, both for the non-Christian man conversion and working on with your Christians to change something in them, to shape them, so they're on this mission with church, partnering in it, and it is a huge turnaround for many people. Because of those two things, I'm going to go through one at a time. So firstly, I'm going to go through the conversion of the outsider. And some of this stuff might be obvious to you guys, but as we talk, hopefully it can be helpful. just going to present a couple myths to you guys as we go, and then we'll use that as a way to engage in this topic. So the first one is every member of your church will evangelize. So that could be coming a lot. That could be... So the myth there could be that you think that everyone in your congregation is evangelizing, or that you think that they will one day be evangelizing. Has anyone had the experience where everyone in their church is active in evangelism? No. I think it is a myth. Yeah, maybe someone did it. I think it is a myth. I don't think we are going to get all of our guys to the point where they are evangelizing. Now, there's different reasons for that, but and there's definitely not a... Andrew's once sort of tried to explain it to me. He thinks it works like you've got sort of 80% of your congregation not doing much, 20% doing a lot. He thinks we can, with a lot of hard work, we could probably push it to 40% doing a lot. But will we ever get the other 60 up doing a lot? No church has ever managed to really do it, in Australia at least. So if we built our evangelistic model and what we're trying to do on that, then it's probably going to fail. So we'll talk about this more, but add on to that is purely we don't want to build our evangelism on the fact that that is going to happen, because it probably isn't going to happen. So we need to find a way of engaging non-Christians, not with that in mind, not counting on everyone being evangelists. We don't want it to fail because we were planning on that. And I guess I think with younger people, you can get more people evangelizing, and that's why it's so important to work at a younger age or a younger stage in Christian life, to help them move forward in the area of evangelism, because what you see time and time again is as people are Christians longer, a funny thing happens, and quite often people sort of decide to sort of like just box themselves in and say, this is what I do. This is what I'm comfortable doing as a Christian. This is the ministry I'm doing. This is how I'm a Christian, how I serve, and that may not include evangelism. And it's really hard to break people out of that once they've sort of clicked into thinking, I'm not that type of Christian who evangelizes, that type of thing. So we want to address that early on, and we want to help people who have done that to themselves sort of come out of that a bit. Second thing to note, a myth, events versus personal evangelism. So those two things have often been set up against each other, as if you can't have one and the other operating, and the church is going to be operating on an event-based evangelism model or a personal evangelism model. We don't think that they are in opposition with each other at all. And in fact, we think that we are always going to have people who are not good evangelists and are not able to do it properly or are not willing to do it properly. So we would never want to not have events, those types of things. So what we want to do is come up with a pathway for people that they can use for the people who are... So this will make more sense as we go through. So a pathway of events for people to invite to use in their personal evangelism. So something that the timid person who doesn't feel confident or isn't very good at explaining the gospel could use, and events and programs that the confident and well-rounded evangelist could use in their evangelism. We found this one helps the other. It doesn't really... We all know we would love everyone in our congregations to be on mission, to be giving themselves to evangelism every day in their workplaces, in their families. But the fact is, it's very hard. We're not going to get everyone there. So we need to have, I guess, a pathway in mind that everyone can use, not just the people who are awesome at it. Okay, third thing there, before we have a bit of a chat about what that might look like, is the pathway is not short. So people becoming converted. Craig tells me that he, when he was doing his uni evangelism ministries, I don't know, back 100 years ago or so, he saw people genuinely converted in a lunchtime, and they're holding on to Jesus now. Has anyone seen that in the last 10 years? So I've been working in mission, 100% in mission for the last 9 years, talked to loads of people every week. I've never seen someone genuinely converted overnight. What our experience is that people take months to generally become converted, best case scenario. We just had a couple of people at our life series, which is our sort of like evangelistic course that we run for people to check out Jesus, recently become Christians. And when we look at the name, we see that they, you know, three out of the four of them have attended life before some three times over the last 4 years. And they've dropped out, they've dropped in. And why that is, I think Craig sort of alluded to it yesterday, is people are a lot further away from understanding the gospel than they used to be. I think it's a cultural thing. Australians have shifted. There was once a time, I hear, when Billy Graham could come to town and say, "You guys are all feeling guilty about sin, aren't you?" And he goes, "Yeah, we are. Jesus." And Andrew calls it this low-lying fruit. Everyone, they were ready to pick and everyone just dropped and they became Christians, sort of thing. Now I feel like the low-lying fruit is gone. It's a lot higher, it's a lot harder. When I speak to people about sin, they don't have a clue what I'm talking about. They think it's ridiculous because they don't believe in God. It's a lot further. And even if people are positively responding to the message of the gospel, the concepts are so large that people need a lot, like quite a while to process what would that mean. Okay, God is real. They're not going to like overnight go through two ways to live and become a Christian. It's like that, I guess, the implications of God being real takes a while to seep in and really, so they start making decisions in light of that. So we find that it's a long process, which means we need to make shorter steps in our evangelistic pathway. So when we're trying to convert people, we don't want to go, you said you want to become a Christian, join a growth group, that'd be awesome, type of thing. We want to create lots of small steps, knowing that people move slowly and they need time to process the big concepts of the gospel. So there's three things talking about how principles that we've got behind how we're designing a pathway for evangelism. And that's what I want to talk a little bit now, and maybe we'll throw some questions around. I'm going to explain something that we do at EV to put a little bit of light on it. Sorry if it's been confusing up to now. Hopefully it'll get a bit better. I'll have to explain a couple things here. But what I've tried to... So I'm looking over here at this funnel. I sort of think... We think of our evangelistic efforts for the outsider through the year as a funnel. So color-coded things, trying to be helpful. Green is the easy asks. It's the really easy asks that people could invite someone along to and blue's a little bit harder again, and then red's quite hard to invite a friend to. So what we're trying to do, keeping in mind that people move slowly, they need a long time to understand the gospel, keeping in mind that a lot of people don't have the ability to share the gospel themselves and need opportunities to invite two things. We've created this sort of funnel idea through our whole year of evangelistic events and efforts to help people with their personal evangelism. So I'll explain it through a little bit, and then maybe you guys can tell me what I haven't explained. So up here, sort of where we are now in August, September, we're doing a thing called the Summer Series Questionnaire. So in January, like a lot of other churches, we do like an evangelistic series in our church services, sort of for four sermons through summer, through January, and so people could invite their friends to it. But what we're doing now up in our growth groups now, we've said to everyone in the growth group, ask as many people as you can a question. And whatever the top response is to that question, that's what we're going to do the talks on in January. So the question this year is, how would you fix the world? So our guys are going around asking as many people as they can, mate, my church is doing this thing. We're going to do these talks in January. We're just trying to ask as many people as we can, how would you fix the world? What do you reckon? Give them little bits of paper because we want to bring them in. We want to actually go over to a friend, that type of thing. Write it down, bring it in. And the timid will probably just go, thanks, appreciate that. Maybe I'll invite you in January. The keen beans, they're going to say, oh, why do you reckon that would fix the world? You know, and move the conversation there. So what we're trying to do there is, for people who have not even put their toes in the water yet, in the world of their personal evangelism, this is an easy first step to ease them in. It's like the shallow end of the pool sort of thing. So if they haven't even told their neighbours they're a Christian yet, this is just I go to church, did you know that, sort of type of thing. For the person who has had 100 conversations with their non-Christian mate at work, great. Excuse to have number 101. So it's good for everyone, that type of thing. But what we're working on here and what I'm trying to represent with this funnel is we're trying to build our contacts, as many contacts as we want. So it's really easy to do, and we're hoping like hundreds, thousands of people will be engaged with that gospel there. So now, What Got? It's a three-part series that we run in November. The catch cry of life is checking out life with Jesus, What God Is. Mate, I don't care about Jesus. I don't even believe in God. That's a myth, that type of thing. So the difference there is it's three nights. We do it at church, make a bit of a thing of it, free dessert, coffee, that type of thing. You don't have to come to all three nights. You can come as a one-off, and it's just pre-evangelistic stuff. Has science disproved God? That type of topic. And we just do the same three topics every year on that one. So it's a bit scary to ask someone of that than this, but it's still that it's not too hard because you're just coming to hear, do you reckon there's a God or not? Then we've got things like carols, and not all the events might be up here, but we've got things like carols. So again, that's pretty easy. The only thing that we've got in mind with carols is I've heard it said a social contract. So I'm not sure if you guys have used that before, but it's the idea of like if you invited your friends to your birthday party and you didn't tell them there wasn't going to be a sermon, but there was a sermon, they would feel ripped off. So what we have in mind with our carols, we say come and sing carols with us. So we're not explaining the gospel at length at our carol services. We're, again, trying to engage with a large group of people. We want to be really easy ask, a really great night, and we pretty much want to say we think Jesus is a big deal. And do you guys want to find out more about that? You could come to church. Let's invite you to church, that type of thing. But again, it's the wide end of the funnel. We're trying to gather lots and lots of people to that. And we want our Christian guys, to use that event to get as many people as we can. Then things like Christmas services, Summerfest, which is it's almost like a beach mission, but we do it at church. So it's kids programs with like an adults tent, and people come every day for sort of 5 days. and engage with the gospel. But again, it's pretty easy ask for the adults sort of things, kids coming along to programs and that type of thing. Then we've got the summer series. So if people go back to their friends, you know that thing that I asked you? Yeah, your answer was lame, and it didn't make the top four, but these ones heaps better. Do you want to come along? Or yours is number one, like, definitely come along with me. Or maybe they didn't even ask, but people can invite them along. So that's in church. It is a bit scary, again, to invite someone along, but people can come to just one of the four, that type of thing, that particularly build on each other. And then out of that, through first term, second term, third term, we run life and follow-up out of life. We call it More Life. So life is our more intensive evangelistic program. And then follow-up from that. So through the year, we got things like Mother's Day, Easter, Father's Day. Again, they're that little bit easier ask. And my hope is like every Sunday would be an evangelistic opportunity, so an opportunity to invite someone to church, particularly for the younger guys. I think it's that opportunity is really there. I don't think young guys are scared of going to church, whereas I think maybe the older generation was. I remember hearing jokes like, oh, I can't go to church, I'll burst into flames, you know, that type of thing. I think the younger generations know, yeah, you're going to play some music, think it's going to be like 90s rock, and, you know, no, it's not going to really be confronting, and I'll just sit there and we'll leave afterwards sort of thing. People aren't scared to do it, I think. So I think church can be a really good invitation. Now, that people rock up in, you know, September that you wish was arriving in January, that type of thing, or vice versa. But what we're trying to do here is just have sense to what we're doing. We want a plan that makes sense to create as many contexts as we can that will flow through into the so better contacts come life and follow up and that type of thing. Any questions about that straight off? Yeah.
Same questions every year.
So three talks. Has science disproved Christianity? The fact that we do it every year, should probably remember them. I don't do the talk, sorry. Yeah, apologetic. Yeah, purely pre-evangelistic. Yeah, that type of thing. And out of that, we would say you know, if you'd like to find out more, you could come to this next step. So at Christmas, we're promoting Summerfest. At Summerfest, we're promoting Summer Series. At Summer Series, promoting life. Probably promote life at a few of them, that type of thing. Yeah. Any other questions? Yeah. Yeah, so Easter and Christmas, they are particularly evangelistic, so we would shape what we do and we'd break from our normal series, what we're preaching through, to you know, preach about Easter or Christmas. But for Mother's Day and Father's Day, we've decided that we're not going to break from our normal preaching series, but the preacher will make an effort to have that evangelistic edge to his sermon, and other elements of the service will shape to make it easier for the outsider. So for Mother's Day, Father's Day, Easter, Christmas, and the summer series, we change how we do church on a weekend, and at times that can be at a cost to what we're trying to do for the Christian. But we've, I guess, weighed the cost of that, and for a short period of time, we think it's worthwhile. We don't want to be, every week, we want to be seeker sensitive. We don't want to be seeker services, as maybe you've heard about before, like church is for the outsider, not for the Christian. We recognise that theologically, church is for the Christian, but whatever we can do to make it easier for the outsider, why wouldn't we do that? That type of thing. So we want to be seeker sensitive. Yeah. Yes.
When you say you have a particularly evangelistic edge before, what sort of do you have ever particular box or whatever, you know, Christianity or greater freedom or something like that.
Yeah, it would be dependent on, I guess, the content, that type of thing. But we would probably promote something that people could do next. I think this is what's going to be the call to action. I'd be really disappointed from a missional point of view if we did a service like that and there wasn't a call to action for the non-Christian. So it'd be, if you want to find out more, you could do this. How would you do that? Down to some of these things. Some of these things could be new to you guys. You might have questions about that. If you'd like to ask questions about it, you could come with your mate down the front and talk to someone afterwards or something like that. Yeah, I'd want some type of call to action, definitely. Not breaking from the normal series has paid it. We have, there's been like weird weeks where we've just had like really weird passages that we've done. Like there was a bit where it was an Old Testament bit and it was talking about the uncleanliness of women and that happened to land on Mother's Day. And this year it was Galatians and for like 6 weeks in a row, we talked about it's not about doing good stuff, makes you a Christian. And then for Father's Day, it broke to chapter 6, and but now that you, that doesn't mean you can go on sinning, type of thing. And I was just like, man, wish Father's Day was just 1 week back, sort of thing, that type of thing. But yeah, that's just like something that we've decided to do there. Yeah.
How do you choose the dates? And so, like, as far as, like, it's going Christmas at the top and then having Easter, like, how do you choose when the fun started with dates and stuff?
Yeah. So something we've recognised on the Central Coast is that people arrive on the Central Coast for some reason are looking for churches on the Central Coast and have time to do things like come into carols through summer. People are just more active, that type of thing. And yeah, I don't know why, but people move, if people are going to move to the coast, they wait to the end of the year to move to the coast, that type of thing. So Christians and non-Christians. So January's always been a growth point for us. January, February's always been a growth point for EV. So that's sort of set this bit. And then I guess we've just worked backwards from there. How do we create more contacts for that? And how do we run this? I'll ask you guys a question about this, life and follow-up. We talked about that's not a fast process to get someone from, you know, first explaining the gospel to solidly converted and trusting in Jesus. What do you guys do as far as, like, we do life and I think called mortal life. Can I ask you guys, what do you guys do at your church? Simple Christianity. So is that, that's, okay, 6 weeks, 10 weeks, what is that? 5 weeks? Yep. And then follow up out of that, what about other churches? So that's a sort of 5 weeks and then some type of one-to-one maybe type of thing and then growth group, yep, that type of thing. What about other people? What are other people doing in their churches?
I do explain Christianity in academic school terms.
Yep.
And then do just start it afterwards and try to create, make that team become a connect group, like a growth group after that.
Yeah, okay, yep, yeah. And what are people, I guess, in your experience of doing this type of thing, like, say at the end of a series of Christianity Explained, life, whatever you call it, how many people do you think are converted? Not many, yep. What I think we found is it's probably about 10% of the people who say they are converted. So out of life, we have seen over the last 15 years, we think we've done a pretty good job with life and follow-up. We've worked really hard on the content and how we do it. We see 1/3 of the people who finish life converted, solidly converted 5 years later. So 1/3. So not everyone finishes life, and those 1/3, not all of them were saying that they were Christian at the end of life. Some of them were. I know that they weren't. So statistically, but we're looking at that number, it seems like the 1/3 of the people that finish life, we can have God holds on to them and they're Christians 5 years later, that type of thing. But yeah, as far as like how many people are Christians at the end of that 6 week series, after we've explained the gospel, even the ones that are very positively responding to it, saying, yeah, I am a Christian, yeah, a very small amount aren't. And I've heard the same thing like time after time, people reflect, you know what? I think I got it about 2 months later. I think that type of thing. And it's in a small group or, some type of follow-up group, that type of thing. Yeah. Other people have that type of experience? Where we've put people into growth groups earlier, we've had lots of bad experiences. I think for the run-of-the-mill growth group leader, it's like how to properly care for and give that person at the very start of their Christian life what they need, and to somehow move, keep moving the rest of your group on, which you want to do. I don't know if I can do it. And I'm pretty sure the rest of EV can't do it either, sort of thing. So, yeah, that's really tough. And I guess for me, the only thing that I'd love you guys to sort of switch in your head there is that is the money end of this whole deal. Like, at the point where you've got all this, that's like money, effort, hours, events, invites, all that, and then they've actually come and they've done your thing with you, and they've said, and they're sort of positively responding so often. I think we used to, and I think lots of people just completely drop the ball. We don't even really have a plan for it. That should be the point where we are like doing our best job at caring for people. And I said it before, we want to create short steps. The step from a bigger event with lots of people asking questions, cool, nice food, coffee, to a stranger calling you up and inviting you to their house where they're going through Galatians, what's a Gentile? You know, this type of thing, that is not a short step. That's a big step for that person. So, yeah, seeing that as the most important bit and working backwards type of thing. And I think the other thing, the most helpful thing that's happened for me is to see your follow-up program, whatever it is, you're establishing someone, and your series itself as one thing. Don't see it as life. We call it mortal life. Don't see it as life and then mortal life. See it as one thing. I think you'll start making decisions about how to get people to the end of mortal life at life. It'll shape how you do both of them. So we called it mortal life. Sort of, you know, there's that's our follow-up to life sort of thing. We try to lessen the jar between those two things. We'll introduce, if it's going to be like a small group leader, we'll introduce that leader week 3, week 5, week 6 of life. All those types of things. We're seeing it as one thing. How do we get someone to the end of mortal life? It's not two things, yeah. You know, I definitely, in times gone by, a week after life finished, I'm still scrambling trying to figure out what I'm going to do with the three people that said they'd like to find out more. I couldn't even say, would you like to come to mortal life? Because I didn't know I didn't have a plan. It was like, do you want to find out more? That type of thing. Yeah. So.
Yeah. How do you deliver how does the preacher deliver the sermon? Is it delivered to more
mature
Christians, or do you have services set aside for those that
are new in
their faith?
Weekend services, do you mean?
Yeah.
No. So the weekend services are, unless we're in our summer series or Christmas or something like that, they're definitely shaped towards the Christian maturing. And we do push, as a matter of principle, Andrew's trying to push people up in their maturity, so the new Christian could find that very challenging, quite hard to understand, unless it's in those special points of the year that are sort of set aside for it. But we'd be seeking to establish those guys in their faith through the follow-up processes, through group work, that type of thing. So what we've developed the content ourselves, but only because I think at the time that we started, there wasn't good stuff. There's lots of good stuff out there now. So life is pretty much explaining the gospel one chunk at a time. The claims of Jesus. Then we stop for a week and talk about how can you trust the Bible? How do you know that's even true? Because all the answers to every question is coming from the Bible. You've got to address that sort of thing. And it interests people in the thing and all. I thought this was all just a load of garbage. Okay, I'll find out. Then we do the problem, sin, and the solution, Jesus. Resurrection, what's the significance? Was it true? Isn't it stupid just to think that someone rose from the dead? And if it is true, so what? Someone came back from life. The significance of it. The sixth week, so what now? What is a Christian? What isn't a Christian? Faith and repentance. And then through what we call mortal life, we'll do 6 weeks on Gospel of Mark. It's just the gospel again, type of thing. And then 5 weeks on assurance topics, more of a topical series. So we want to give people assurance that they are actually saved and what that means, how they know that they're saved, that type of thing. And then after that, for the younger guys that I usually work with, at that point, some of them may be ready to go into a normal growth group. So we'd send them to, I think, called Startup, which is what Christians would do if they wanted to jump into growth groups, that type of thing. So, but at that point, I think for the younger guys who, I think Craig works with older guys, 60-year-old Catholics, men, sort of things like, for him to find out that he's been living his whole life wrong and he's a fool, that's a bigger deal than the 20-year-old who just goes, I never heard about this. Sweet, sort of thing. And the young guys automatically make friends. By the time I say, would you like to go into growth group, they go, I've secretly been going to 3. and I've got more friends than you do at 90. That type of thing. And that's a real... That's a positive thing that the younger guys have, whereas I think the older guys, they're not going to connect as easily. And working through those big issues and what the gospel is going to mean for them, that's generally a longer process. So Craig would hold on to them as long as 6 months in sort of specialised follow-up groups. And that's really painful. If you start with 10 and... halfway, you know, 2 months later, only 6 are coming because the other guys, you know, decided they didn't want to find out about Jesus anymore. And then on any given night, 2 of them are sick and the rest of them are women and the follow-up leaders are got, you know, that type of thing. It's just hard work to constantly sort of make sure these are viable groups. Sometimes people will be like, I'm pretty sure that guy would love just going to a growth group. Can you stay for the sake of this group? Because if you leave, it's going to get weird, that type of thing. So keeping those groups together as long as we can. But, yeah, it seems to be quicker for the younger guys, I think. Yep.
Love this and the order to church life that it brings, and people understand what's coming next and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
It's really, really good. But I'm gathering that this is one of 5 areas of church life that we're looking at. I'm looking at this going, I reckon if I do this, I've got 6 months in ministry. Before I've learned myself out doing all this stuff.
Yeah.
So I've got a bunch of people that I've got to employ in the ministry area first, right, to get them into something like this. So go back a couple of steps for me and tell me how you would prioritise what you would choose to do first. If you're in a small...
Yeah, that's really good. And I should have said something about that at the start. I think that's exactly the question to ask. It's okay that there's a big plan there that you might implement, something like that, but you can't do them all this year, sort of thing. I think if you don't have an effective life follow-up structure, that's where I'd be working first, and I would just, if you have any bridge-building events, currently, maybe it is just the Christmas service, or maybe you have some type of summer mission, I'd put it strategically after that, so you can promote it there, that type of thing. And just as your energy increases, as your as volunteers are built up to run some of those things, you can keep adding another arrow to your quiver, working at having more contacts there, working at having more of those, that type of thing. But yeah, I think these. I should have also said as well the two things, seeing non-Christians converted and helping your Christians to be on gospel, these are blending as I'm talking because they are so entangled. I think this, having a structure like that in your church, or at least a plan to have a structure, is something that you can hang the work for Christians on as well. So we'll do things like we did an event. People found out it was hard to talk to people about Jesus. We'll do some training for Christians. You know, that type of thing. There's something coming up, so we're going to help people have a conviction of their needing to gospel before that type of thing. So when I first started at Night EV didn't really have any evangelism, and the Sunday morning stuff wasn't working for them. So Craig said, start life first and then build from there and hang all your training of Christians and those types of things off that. So the best training we do is people that go along to these events and use these things. That type of thing, but we'll talk about more like that. But yeah, I think it's one thing to do it. If you can't make it make sense on paper, then you're just doing something wrong. Like if you don't have a plan at all, we just spontaneously do a bridge building event after our thing, after our evangelistic series once a year, and that's just all we've done, it doesn't make sense, then that's a silly sort of thing. So yeah, I think having a plan and a plan that makes sense, and I think the same way that you sort of go, like, I like that, I'd like to do something like that, I think all the people in your churches as well. I find I've got a tendency of wanting to roll things out fully polished and not actually let people in what's behind that and what. And whenever that happens, I think people are just really envisioned and excited. So explaining that through to the Night EV guys, I go, what? I'm actually going to invite people to carols then. That type of thing. I still just randomly did things. But to let them in behind that, see why we're doing things, be a part of it, shape things, but more than anything, just understand that there's thought behind the madness of why we're working so hard and why we're doing the things we do. I think that's really encouraging and helpful. Yeah. That type of thing would be in ministry teams, growth groups, and maybe special one-off type of events where that you've created for almost for the purpose of vision setting and that type of thing. So we just got back from a night EV weekend away. So that's a good opportunity where you've got the core away and you can discuss those types of things.
What do you do with failure when you've organised one and an engineering and you don't sort of get traction people might get?
Yeah. Yep. Well, I think I really do feel the weight of people of it not working, because I want to see people saved and I get discouraged still. But I think we'll talk about this in a moment, but confidence that when church says something's going to be good, it is going to be good, is an important thing. So I work really hard at events or programs or whatever, despite how much buy-in we've got, because there's Christians there seeing it or a part of it, and if we do a good job of it, they will trust it more and use it more next time, that type of thing. So, you know, in the early days of life, we'd invite one or two growth groups and we'd say, invite your friends, knowing that they probably won't invite their friends. But sure enough, the term after that, those same people who know it and trust it were the inviters, that type of thing. So, fail is hard, but I think there's always wins you can get if you just work really hard at it. But it does, it raises the stakes of doing a good job. If you say, bring your dad next Sunday night. It's bring your dad night. You know, a funny slide goes up with some funny looking dad. Don't worry, we'll make it awesome. Dads will love it. We'll give them a gift and free dinner for the dads, that type of thing. And then they come, they do it, they trust you, and they bring your dad, and then you do something really, you do communion sort of thing. And you send this message to the non-Christians, like, yeah, I know Christianity is all about doing weird stuff. And all the Christians are like, mental note. When church says invite someone, it'll be good. They don't mean it. They're going to stuff it, sort of thing. So I think it's really, we got to be really careful. When we say something's going to be a good invite opportunity, we got to work really hard at making it as good as we can so people build confidence in it. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, so I guess EV is a little bit different to other churches because it's grown over the years. We have, I guess, diversified within services. So Night EV shoots for an age demographic. A lot of night congregations, just the Saturday night congregation shoots for a different demographic. It's more of a socio-economical demographic, if anything. Sunday morning is young families, that type of thing. So that type of thing comes at a cost, definitely. It's hard. You can't just roll the same thing out over multiple things. And for the young guys, it makes them hard to be and have leadership from older men. Because you've shaped your service in a way that makes old guys want to go and young guys come. So we have to work really hard at making sure the younger guys are discipled well, despite of that, but we've weighed the cost and we've decided for the sake of the loss of the coast, the finicky, fussy, young non-Christians of the coast, we will make our services a place where young people will feel comfortable, will like that type of thing. EV is in a higher socio-economical area than other churches, and we're struggling to fix that. That I think where I live, if any of my neighbours walked into EV, they may feel uncomfortable and go, this isn't really, no one dresses like I do here. Everyone here is rich and that's just because where EV is situated. There was a strategic move early on. We got high level leadership very early. I don't know what it is. What population to doctors? I don't know. Something like one doctor for 10,000 or something ridiculous. EV's got like 100 doctors. Something like that sort of thing. So we got, yeah. So we're that little bit higher socio, uni educated type of thing. But we're trying to fight against it.
Just a little more about how you tailor the life stuff for the demographics.
Yeah, okay. So that could be from the time slot you do it in to the presenter. Who is the presenter? So Craig doesn't speak at mine. A guy called Jez does. Craig would do a better job. But the non-Christians care about silly things. So they need to be able to relate to the guy at the front. So the presenter, the content, the illustrations, food, coffee, the set out, the vibe, the look of the promotion, how you promote it, those types of things. All those things we would work on and consider. If you want more specifics, maybe I could chat to you about that afterwards. But nothing's off limits there, sort of thing. We'll do whatever we can. Yep.
Questions really left to simple, feel free to answer later. I'm kind of thinking mission in a youth context, so through youth group and through that little community, not so much a Sunday church setting. Do you guys have a strategy? How does that work? And if you talk about it.
Yeah, we can talk about it later, but it looks, they have something similar. They've got a series and they run it Friday afternoon before youth. So invite people along. You come with your non-Christian mate to that thing, that type of thing. But that's still developing. All right, well, more questions will come as we go. This is talking about Christians, helping your Christians engage with the gospel and be on mission. So a myth is the mature will automatically engage. So again, we did mention it, but you could think that all your mature guys are on mission. Or you could think that as they mature, they will automatically start to mature. That's not the case. It'd be great if it was. But what we have recognised is people develop in different areas of Christian life and mature in different areas of Christian life at different rates. And I think evangelism often lags behind because it's hard. Just because it's awkward and hard and people don't actually want to do it. Sort of thing. So you can be growing in your maturity in every other area and not. So we know we have growth group leaders, the people who are discipling a group who are not on mission and they don't think it's for them, that type of thing. And that's something that we're working on, that type of thing. So, yeah, but people can be maturing and not growing in evangelism and to just think that as they mature, it will automatically happen. That I think that's foolishness. The percentage. So that summer series thing, that is so easy. Like, we make it so easy. Just talk to one friend. Say, this is how they say it. It's not weird. They'll expect you to say something like this because you go to church. Say, what, you know, if you could ask a question to God, what would you ask him? That's not scary, is it? They'll probably like it. It'll be funny. If you want to push it further, you ask these questions, that type of thing. So through that, the very best response that we've had is 50% of what the Night of Ed congregation, which is the one that does the best at it, 50% of people in growth groups did it. And that's the very easiest thing you could do. The people in your growth groups, only still then, 50% of them were willing to do it, sort of thing. So will the mature automatically be on mission? I don't think so. Leslie Ramsey, he was here the other day, been working in mission a lot longer than I have. She says on average about 20% of people in churches are actively engaging with their friends, family, community with the gospel. I think to add there, next slide if you're listening, lack of confidence will stop otherwise mature people dead in their tracks. So we need to, that's two clicks later. It's all right, never mind. back to the same thought. Lack of confidence is significant. So that's confidence in their ability to engage with the gospel, engage someone with the gospel, and lack of confidence in the event that they're inviting to, that type of thing. Those things will stop an otherwise mature person. It shouldn't, but it just does. So you need to figure out a way to engage people and grow people's confidence. The next one does relate to it. So faithful preaching creates evangelists. As a myth, so I don't know if I choose the right word there, evangelist. Maybe I should have just written faithful preaching creates people who are on mission. It's very possible for us to preach faithfully. Hope you know what I mean by when I say that, through the Bible and not to be producing evangelists, that type of thing. And it is a maturity issue. This is a maturity issue. And what we need to be working on is their conviction that, sort of what Andrew's been talking about on the first day, conviction that Jesus is right, heaven and hell is a reality, the resurrection happened, and the gospel is the only way to be saved, and it can save, and it will save people. So conviction that people need to be saved, they need to hear about this, and if they hear about this, people can be saved. That's the thing. And conviction will drive all the rest. If you are truly convicted of those things, despite your confidence, you will push on. Or you will do something to become more confident, that type of thing. But that's the big one, the conviction that these things are important. And it's a maturity issue. So I think your growth groups need to be intentionally working into people's conviction for the gospel. And I think your preaching needs to be working on people's conviction for the gospel. Example of how to do that, application. Of course, you'll be praying that people are saved, so that the importance of people be saved. But doing things like in your preaching, whenever possible, to engage and show people how the Christian worldview is superior and able to stand and make sense in light of the world's worldview. To engage with issues, to engage with questions, to engage with doubts about Christianity in your preaching whenever possible is smart, and it will build conviction and confidence, what I was speaking about a moment ago. And that may not naturally happen if you're purely trying to expound the passage that week. I think you need to have that secondary purpose. When I lead growth group, yeah, I want to get to the main point of the passage, but I want to teach people how to read the Bible. Two things. I'm trying to do two things. And if all I did was got the right answer every night, and at the end of the year, that group couldn't read the Bible any better for themselves when they go home, I've only hit half my purposes there. So now preaching and all our maturity structures, we want to be building people's conviction as well as teaching the Bible there. All right, last one there. Christian has no contacts. So if you guys could... Oh, sweet. So Christians have no contacts. It's our opinion that, yeah, as someone gets older in the faith and they become... if they've been on mission for a long time and they've done a good job of it, they can use contacts to a degree, sort of thing. But what we find is those guys who are genuinely on mission usually find more or just keep doing it or become this funny type of evangelist where they start just getting the oddball randoms who are anyone who's willing to talk to them from the street or from buses, that type of thing. But yeah, there's that. But generally speaking, what we have noticed is that people do have the opportunity to make contacts. People do have contacts. It's two things going on. It could be they lack conviction or confidence, or they have those things and they've just never seen evangelism done properly. And they really just do not know how to start. They don't know how to strategically think, all right, who are the contacts I have? How would I want to engage those guys? So I have to rush this through now. But so for us, that the first thing, how we want to see people evangelized and saved, we've said, so we need a pathway that makes sense. We want to see the Christians on mission. So you need a plan, so pathway and a plan sort of thing. And when we're thinking, our plan consists of these three things, conviction, confidence, and connection. So we're thinking, how are we developing conviction in our people? What structures do we have in place that we can do that? What, you know, maybe there's a structure that we need in place where we could do that. Connection, that's tough. It's actually hard to think other than, hey, maybe you should join a soccer club. That's not going to cut it. So, you know, we had to come up with that summer series thing. Yeah, that's an opportunity where the growth group leaders will actually find out if their people do talk to people about Jesus. So, one, we'll make it an easy opportunity. They'll build their contacts. And two, we'll get an idea if that person needs particular discipleship in that area, that type of thing, and helping them think strategically through the contacts they have, how they're going at that. Next time I speak to that person, you know, what would be the point of the gospel that I could engage them with? Yeah, that type of thing. We don't think there's a silver bullet. The way we do anything is a good way of doing it. But if there is particular resources or plans or whatever it is that you would be curious about seeing or maybe using that EV has, where we want to share those things, that type of thing. So if in amongst any of that you go, yeah, I wonder what they do at life or their follow-up structure, that type of thing. How to implement all that in a smaller setting is tough, but EV was small and it's grown from there, type of thing. I'll pray. Thank you, God, for this time. Pray that it will be helpful for us thinking through how we're engaging non-Christians and Christians in the area of evangelism, Lord God. Pray that you can help each one of us have a strong conviction that people need to be saved, and that is only through your Son Jesus that can happen. We pray that we can help other people see that also. Amen.